You are listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Carlos Acosta and I'm in Cuba to try to save one of the country's most remarkable buildings, Victorio Garati School of Ballet in Havana. In Cuba, culture shapes our national identity, and I owe my life to the ballet training that my country gave to me. Now, I want to give something back to Cuba. Ballet, it was a shelter. It was my greatest friend, the friend that I always had. And thanks for ballet, it's that I am who I am. And, my country gave me the chance to experience that for free. And now that I've grown and I have this amazing career, I want to be able to repay that debt. The school is an extraordinary cluster of interlocking brick and terracotta domes on the side of Cuba's National School of Arts, Las Escuelas Nacional de Artes. You might think at a first glimpse that you are in Rome, but in fact you are in Havana. You know, it's unbelievable scale. They got three major ballet studios already projected, these big domes, all in terracotta, very green material made of earth. To the eye, it's just beautiful to look at and to witness. And it's just a lovely entrance. Look at this. You can imagine here at night, having a nice glass of wine in the intermission while you see the Royal Ballet in the theater. And then, you see this in this foresty environment in the middle of the tropics. I mean, unbelievable. It has a terrific flora and fauna. It's completely green, and it offers a completely different activities and different feel from the old town. When I was a kid growing up in Cuba, I never dreamed I would end up as a principal dancer of one of the world's leading ballet companies. While I was playing with my friends in Los Pinos, the Havana neighborhood where I grew up, I dreamed of becoming a famous soccer player. Fortunately for me, my father had other ideas. I didn't like school very much. I was on the path of delinquency a bit. I was stealing, already fruits in the neighborhood in order to go to pay me a ticket for the cinema because, we were very poor. And this already was distorting my education. And my father had this inside and they saw the danger. And at the same time, he always liked ballet. And so they all came together so that a neighbor downstairs recommended this ballet school, who was in El Vedado, the center of the city. And the next thing I knew, I was in a ballet bar trying to learn this art that later on was going to be my life. I never intended to have this career that I have. I sort of was a very shy man, very insecure. But when I dance, I would produce something on people. And, I try to bring myself to a skill, my body, to the point that I can actually become the best I could be. And it changed me completely. And I'm really grateful. Sadly, Victorio Garati's ballet school was abandoned even before it was completed, and decades of neglect have left it in a tragic decline. It's going to cost $10 million, around £6 million, to restore and complete the school, but I hope to create an international dance and art center that in the long term will be self-sufficient. Unfortunately, some parts of the plan have created divisions with the original architect, Victorio Garati.
Il signor Acosta, in un viaggio a Cuba.
Mr. Acosta, in a journey to Cuba, discovered this structure for ballet and thought he'd make it, and this he said to me, to make it a private school. He can travel around and dance as much as he wants, but he can't make a private enterprise out of something that is for the community, dedicated to the arts across many countries, across continents. So the entire disagreement grows from this thing.
Tutto l'equivoco nasce da questa cosa.
It is important that the building is sustainable and that it generates income so that it can then restore itself and maintain itself. The money had to come from somewhere, and the economy here is not, right now, is not so abundant. Let's face it, it's almost non-existent to actually sustain something like this. So we need to try to adapt our models so that we don't have to depend, from the Cuban government. The Cubans will be for free, that's for sure. I have an advantage because somebody, I find a helping hand along the way, and now it's time for me to go back. And this is how we shape the future. First, I will save, by saving this school, a national monument, a national treasure, that it will be a direct bridge from Cuba to the world of art. And at the same time, it would be a legacy, you know, to give to my country and to create and to try to launch the career of new generations of artists and dancers. Las Escuelas Nacionales de Arte is set on the golf course of a former country club in Western Havana. In 1961, after a game of golf, Fidel Castro and Che Guevara came up with the idea of building a national school for the study of arts. They hired three young architects to create the buildings: Ricardo Porro from Cuba, and Italians Roberto Gottardi and Vittorio Garatti. The School of Arts was built on a wave of revolutionary optimism, but the Cuban government's ideology changed in favor of more functional buildings, and the architects were condemned as elitist. Mario Coyula is one of Cuba's leading architects.
There was a time in the early 60s, just after the triumph of the revolution, January the 1st, 1959, when everything seemed possible. And you had that feeling everywhere. When you were working, you had the feeling that if you came up with a good idea, it would work, it would be carried out. And it happened like that. And the funny thing is that in late 60s, this movement that destroyed architecture started. The whole theoretical idea was that you had to stop thinking about beauty, concerning about beauty, in order to build a lot and well built. And the funny thing is that in the end, buildings were ugly, of course, because you started without concern for beauty, but there were not as many as needed, and they were not well built. They cracked, they leaked, they had a lot of construction problems, which means that beauty is part of quality.
John Loomis is the author of Revolution of Forms, Cuba's Forgotten Art Schools.
What happened is the design of the schools began to be seen as heresy and ideologically and politically incorrect. And the Argentine-Cuban architectural critic Roberto Segre was vicious in his criticisms of the school, accusing them of being of monumentalism, historicism, neglecting the needs of the people, designed with bourgeois criteria instead of socialist criteria, and accusing the architects of being elitists and aristocrats and counter-revolutionaries, effectively. It was a very vicious and cruel critique.
In 1965, work on the schools was suddenly stopped. The really sad thing is, the ballet school was only weeks from completion.
By the time of 1963 and the October Missile Crisis, and after the Missile Crisis, Cuba took a new view as to how they should be allocating their resources. They felt very hemmed in and threatened by the United States, so they began a large militarization and effectively turned, you know, Cuba into the Sparta of the Caribbean. And with this expenditure of resources, they actually had to find places to cut elsewhere. And to some of government officials, you know, this extravagant school of the arts seemed like a really excessive expenditure. And in fact, it even started without even a budget. There was this incredible euphoria and enthusiasm that they didn't even think about creating a budget for it. But they were very far along. And for example, like the School of Ballet was, you know, 90% complete. So to cite economic reasons for halting it makes no sense. You know, that is not a fiscally responsible decision.
There was a kind of vision around the schools of arts of a curse, an ill-fated curse on the schools, because they were never finished. Well, two of the out of the five were actually finished, both by Ricardo Porro, who was a Cuban architect and the main architect in the team. And they were inaugurated in 1965, And at that time exactly, the schools were paralyzed. So the rest, ballet, modern dance, and music were paralyzed and remained like that. Ballet was the one most advanced when the paralyzation started, and it was up to 90% built. It was vandalized and stolen. Many components of the buildings were, like the windows, glasses, even the floors were stolen. But the structures, beautiful big domes, are still there, beautiful.
There are 5 schools on the site, including this amazing school of ballet designed by Garatti.
In the first place, we had thought of a single project, one center, a single building. But the direction of the various specialities, for reasons of organization and function, required separate projects. But nonetheless, they were separate projects united in one beautiful park. The main characteristic of this park was a garden, a large garden. The references we looked at were garden designs, and the historical references might be classic English gardens and parks, also the French love pavilions, but overall the large and ample history of Arabian garden design. It's enough to think of 1001 Nights, Granada, Alhambra. So those were the references. There is movement in the design, because there's movement in the nature and the way the landscape tumbles down around it.
Mosso come i bambini quando fanno giocano a fare l'aeroplano, ma però il balletto.
Sometimes I would run around like a child when they're playing that game aeroplane. Dance is all about movement, rotation, rotary movements. It's not like I sat down to think about the ballet school in the same way as if I was designing a car factory. Each theme naturally has to enter you. You must love it. You must know it.
Lo deve amare, lo deve conoscere.
We walk into this corridor. Kind of looks like a catacumba, a bit. I mean, less gloomy, of course, but you see this?
This is beautiful, isn't it?
Isn't that amazing? Look at the light, how it falls. It looks like a lamp. These are the classrooms. So you had the classroom, the chalkboard, the students would be here, the teacher is playing, you know, is teaching Spanish or whatever, mathematics, physics or whatever, and then just go in. And then, you know, here you carry on. Look at that. Look at the light. It's truly remarkable. I mean, even Norman Foster came and he was mesmerized by what he saw, because in 61 no one, you know, was doing anything quite like this. It was revolutionary at the time.
It certainly is. I mean, in here, I mean, you can hear the echo, and it's just this beautiful, long, sweeping corridor.
And very atmospheric, and imagine, you know, people walking by here. And even in this wall, you could have some sort of exhibition, you know, paintings and things like that. And it really is a crime to see that they left this building almost decay in such a way. See that bat? It's not Dracula, it's just a bat, you know. This was the place where the rich would come and play golf and bathe themselves in luxury. And the whole place is just absolutely exotic and wonderful. You see around you all these palm trees, you see the hummingbirds. It really is a wonderful place to come and create art. Fidel Castro and Che Guevara, they had this idea to produce 5 of the best art school in the world. Music, drama, the contemporary dance school, the ballet school, and the plastic art school. And those 5 schools were initiated, but only 2 were completed and still function. It was a grand vision. The national arts schools were meant to house more than just artists. They were to be the physical embodiment of national pride.
The National Schools of Art, the Escuelas Nacionales de Arte, are a particularly inspired work of architecture. The architects themselves, Ricardo Porro, Roberto Gottardi, and Vittorio Garatti, have stated that their designs reflected the ideals of openness, freedom. They also reflected the emotions, the joy, burst of optimism and energy that was felt with the overthrow of Batista and the prospect of a utopian future, which was very much the dream in the eyes of these very young men.
Many years later, Castro said it has been a mistake to leave the schools unfinished and promised to complete the project. His government started the renovations, then ran out of money, and it was abandoned yet again. This would be the entrance of the theater. It looks like a Roman amphitheater. The seats, and from this point on, it would be the stage. The band or the orchestra might be in different level, because we will have to adapt ourselves to the design, which means that the shows that you will see here, you will see like nowhere else. This level, or such as like a ramps, that they, this is where the orchestra will play, and it will play like a decorative element as well. So you see the dancer, you see the orchestra at the back, you know, it adds, so very, it brings a different experience.
A very visual experience, because you see every element of the production.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, huh?
It's beautiful, it really is. Let's wander down this way and have a look at what else is down here.
This is one of the dance studios.
It's very muddy.
Look how big.
Wow.
Hmm?
And like you say again, that kind of sense of space and light and air.
Amazing. Yeah, you see, and it's big, generous studio, and then people will be here watching the performance or the rehearsal, they will be dancing, the mirrors over there, the piano playing, all these kids doing that, and then the audience witness, you know, the class, and people will go and come to see this, how it is that we train in this space. Just beautiful. And then go to the beach afterwards. But not everyone shares my vision. When the British architect Norman Foster carried out a feasibility study, it led to concern that the plans threatened to sideline Garatti and undermine the integrity of his original design.
Acosta ha una visione del balletto estremamente dogmatico.
Acosta has a vision of ballet which is extremely dogmatic. He, in a little meeting we had before, told me that the theatre needed a proscenium. Now, a proscenium arch is something that is created by and for set design. It's not something that's necessary for the architecture. And other things that were changes to help with choreography, etc. Okay, those are things that can be done. But you have to check with the author, because he's alive. This seems pretty elementary.
Con l'autore, perché l'autore è vivo. Così mi sembra abbastanza elementare.
And then the schools are a single project where anyone can enter. These schools, like all education in Cuba, are free.
A Cuba non si paga l'università.
When I met Mario Coyula at his home in Havana, I wanted to know why he thinks my plans to restore the ballet school have caused so much controversy. So Mario, it is wonderful to be here with you. It's an honor to meet you. And I just try to understand what it is the mainly concern that has been arisen in the midst of all this polemic and speculation. Because I really try to understand.
Since you offered intervention,
yeah, exactly,
with that.
Exactly.
The main concern, I think, it's ethics. It's about bringing in a new architect, Norman Foster, bringing him. Him into a project of someone who's still alive and with a clear mind. And I think there has been a misinterpretation and lack of communication. And you don't get the whole idea, and then you get angry, you insult the other guy, and then the other guy answers. So it's interesting. Up to which point you can come in this flexibility. A tree has to be flexible to resist the wind and then go back to the same position. And I had the feeling that from both parts you have been a little too rigid. We were talking that Roberto Gottardi, who is in the School of Theater, says a very interesting thing. He says, I cannot come today, right now, today, with the same project I did 50 years ago, because the world has changed, Cuba has changed, theater has changed, the educational theater has changed, and I myself have changed as an architect. I was a very young architect at that time, and now I have a different approach.
It is great that I had this opportunity to explain what did happen, because I think the miscommunication and misinterpretation is a key factor. Mm-hmm. The involvement of Norman Foster is creating and leading a campaign with the figure...
To raise funds.
Exactly, to endorse the project. He's not going to design anything, you know. But also it's not viable. Nobody's going to bring Foster here. Nobody wants to bring Foster here.
And he's an expensive architect.
Absolutely. And he's endorsing the project here in Cuba. And these things have value, and we should embrace that. We should try to speculate. You know, he don't have no business with that school. You know, all he's saying, he, as a fellow architect, he said, wow, unbelievable. Yes, I'm going to try to do the best we can to support this huge project, a visionary project. And he did it, and that's done. When we got the funding, we had to designate the project team. And when we found the funding, Victorio is going to be there leading that team. That's always been, because he is alive and he should finish the baby. But with the functional, it's like you're saying, a little bit changing of the functional.
The changes in function should be done by him.
By him, but nobody ever saw different. Cuba's National School of Arts had been one of Castro's great dreams at the beginning of the revolution. The challenge was extraordinary, to reflect Cuba's art, its important musical tradition, Cuban dance, and especially the revolution. The School of Arts is a legacy of Cuba's cultural history. We have a duty to save it. This is going to be everybody's legacy in a way, because it's not about me, it's not about Garatti, it's about this building now, and it's going to just be reduced to dust. Ultimately, there is no ballet here. Ultimately, there is a theater that doesn't function, and ultimately, what it is right now is death. But, you know, the good thing about this, Cecil, is that it's never too late. And we got the endorsement of Norman Foster, and Norman Foster is one of the gods of the architecture. If a god says this is a good project and this is an amazing building worth saving, well, you're not going to argue with God, right? We're going to take a short break, but in a moment we'll be back to find out why the fate of Havana schools of ballet has such an important place in Cuba's culture.
Freedom 2014 on the BBC World Service.
A year-long inquiry into press standards in Britain has issued a damning conclusion.
It's said that a free press is essential to democracy, but scandals and security leaks in the UK have led to calls for state regulation.
On too many occasions, those responsibilities, along with the editor's code of conduct, which the press wrote and promoted, have simply been ignored.
But what are the consequences of press regulation?
The political leaders say it will defend the freedom of the press while at the same time ensuring better behaviour and higher standards from Britain's often boisterous papers.
As part of the Freedom 2014 season, Steve Hewlett will be joined by a panel of international editors and correspondents to ask, is the press free? Online from Wednesday at bbcworldservice.com.
Hello, I'm Carlos Acosta. I'm in my native Cuba to try to rescue the ruins of a remarkable ballet school in Havana and open it as an international dance center. In a moment, I'll be finding out why the fate of this school holds such an important place in Cuba's culture. I'll also be exploring why Cuba's diverse dance and music tradition is so central to our sense of national identity, after this roundup of the latest news.
BBC News with Mike Cooper. It's been almost 24 hours since a Malaysian Airlines flight from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing was reported missing, but there's still no indication of what happened, despite an air and sea search involving several countries. As night fell, there was no sign of any wreckage. Earlier reports of two apparent oil slicks sighted off the Vietnamese coast have not been confirmed. 239 people were on board. Relatives waiting in Beijing for news expressed anger at the lack of information. Malaysia Airlines said most passengers on the missing plane were Chinese, with 14 nationalities listed on the manifest. But the foreign ministries of Italy and Austria said none of their citizens were on board, and the names of two of their nationals were those of two people whose passports had been stolen in Thailand. More than 50 observers from the Organisation for Security and Cooperation in Europe have been turned back when they tried to enter Crimea. Warning shots were fired by pro-Russia forces at the border checkpoint. Meanwhile, the man who's been named the Prime Minister of Crimea held a ceremony to swear in pro-Russian self-defence volunteers as members of what he called a new Crimean army. The United States says it's deeply concerned about what it describes as the recent escalation of violence in the Sudanese region of Darfur. The US State Department said forces supported by the Sudanese government had burned homes and attacked civilians near the town of Niala. The Libyan Prime Minister has threatened to bomb a North Korean-flagged tanker if it takes an illegal oil shipment from separatist militants at an eastern port. Ali Zeidan said that orders had been issued to arrest the tanker's crew. The militants said they'd start loading oil at the port of El Sidr. The European Union's head of foreign policy, Catherine Ashton, has arrived in Tehran on a three-day visit to Iran. Catherine Ashton played an important role in negotiating an interim agreement curbing Iran's nuclear program. BBC News.
I'm Carlos Acosta. I'm in Cuba to try to save one of the country's most remarkable buildings, Victorio Garati School of Ballet in Havana. In the second half of Will Carlos Acosta Get to the Point, I'll be finding out why the fate of Havana's School of Ballet has such an important place in Cuba's national consciousness, and exploring more of the country's rich artistic heritage. The government, the revolution, invested so much, you know, heavily into the arts and education. This was one of the main subjects that they championed. And as a result, you got a highly educated population in terms of arts of all kinds. Of course, we all know that Cuban roots, music background, it dated back to the African times. We also have a great tradition of writers that also dated back even before the revolution, and so on. And so art is a constant theme in Cuba. And for so long it's been like that, it has become a way of life. After the revolution in 1959, Fidel Castro pledged a strong commitment to the arts, especially ballet, a commitment that continues to this day. He opened free art schools and cultural centers for the masses, and thanks to this program, which gave free tuition to talented students like me, ballet was able to flourish.
That's right. Now go, second one. Yeah, that's good.
Miguel Cabrera is the historian for the National Ballet of Cuba and one of my oldest friends.
Oh, I think I know that face.
You must have an elevator here. What's going on?
Sabes que siempre. Sabes que siempre te pongo de ejemplo. Cuando sube. En el campo específico del ballet, desde 1948.
From 1948, when the company was founded, until 1956, it was privately run with a very small state subsidy from the Batista government. That help from the state was achieved thanks to pressure from university students and other progressive groups who wanted culture to be a right for all the Cuban people. It was a very difficult job, but Alicia and Fernando Alonso and Alberto Alonso, who founded the company, didn't lose faith in it. They knew one day they would achieve that goal.
Tú preguntarás por qué hablo del 56, porque en ese año la dictadura de Batista quitó la pequeñísima ayuda que recibía la compañía para vivir y la compañía desapareció.
Why am I speaking about 1956? Because in that year the Batista dictatorship withdrew its subsidy and the company disappeared. But during those 8 years from 1948 to 1956, the foundation of what the school is today was laid. The three heads of the company were visionaries. They developed a Cuban technique which incorporated choreography from both the romantic and the classical repertoire. A repertoire which showed everything that could be performed in ballet was created.
Los clásicos y se inició una cultura latinoamericana y universal.
Castro gave Alicia Alonso a substantial state subsidy as part of a wide-ranging cultural program.
En 1959 es el propio Fidel Castro quien va a...
Fidel Castro knew of the loss of the ballet company and personally visited the Alonsos. He valued the work they had done and he asked them, how much do you need to restore the company? The Alonsos now had the support they needed to reorganize the school and the life of ballet changed. The money was important, but more important was the belief in ballet as an art form in Cuba.
There is images of documentaries with Alberto Alonso when he talks about when Castro knocked at his door and when he opened Castro with guns and they say, you know, he talks and talks politics for so long in his home. And then he said, but I actually came here to talk about ballet. And say, he said, how much do you need to get the whole company rolling, but a first-rate company? And he say, $1 million. Say, Alberto, he said, $1 million. He said, I'll tell you, we give you $2 million, but you have to guarantee a company of first rate.
Y Alicia y Fernando tuvieron la claridad de pensamiento de saber que eso...
The private academy disappeared. And with the state funding, Alicia and Fernando were able to set up a national network of ballet schools in every city and province. And at the top of that system was the National Ballet School.
Que tiene, tú sabes, una escuela en casi todas las provincias y una escuela que tiene un carácter nacional que gradúa bailarines.
Alicia Alonso turned ballet into a popular art form and placed it within the reach of every Cuban.
People will come with bicycle. You ask them, you know, what do you do for a living? And they tell you, I'm a hairdresser. Or I am, you know, I don't know, an operator somewhere. And they could comment on the show about the music, about the style, and they have their own artistic opinions, how things are went. You know, I think it's pretty much a phenomenon. Even the Royal Ballet, when the Royal Ballet came here in 2009, that was one of the things that impressed them the most.
Fidel Castro set out to define a new national cultural identity for Cuba. Central to that vision was Cuba's National Schools of Arts, five schools dedicated to the study of plastic arts, music, drama, modern dance, and ballet. John Loomis is the author of Revolution of Forms, Cuba's Forgotten Art Schools.
The National Schools of Art, the Escuelas Nacionales de Arte, they reflected ideas that were corollary to the revolution, you know, Cubanidad, which is the essence of Cuban identity and culture. And this meant acknowledging, for them, it meant also acknowledging and celebrating the African culture that is found in Cuban culture.
Carabela, kundu, kundu, kundu. Carabela, ah, willy, willy, kundu.
All the Africans gave those rhythms, African rhythms, that then it melted with the Spanish guitar, the Spanish influences, and then that music and that tradition evolved into becoming a costumes of the Creole, people who actually were born in the island. And that is what we now call Cubania, which is this Cubanness that we can help to bring in anything we do.
Cubanidad really came up as an issue in the 1800s as Cuba was seeking its independence. José Martí was at the center of this intellectual debate. You know, what were they going to be? You know, they were no longer going to be a Spanish colony. Well, who were they? They were not a Euro or Hispano-centric culture, but that they were a mulatto culture with a heavy influence of the African culture.
Ese fenómeno es único. Que se da también en el sur de Estados Unidos y se da también en Brasil.
Antonio Pérez Ávila is a musicologist and a director at EGREM, the state-owned record label.
Ese es un fenómeno que se da que incluso.
In other parts of the Caribbean, the traditional culture brought by the African slaves was repressed. It's a phenomenon that in the 21st century, generations of African ritual and culture survive intact in Cuba. And today there are groups who still play traditional music from Africa. And from those influences, an acquired culture has grown.
Porque de cómo surge el bolero? ¿De dónde surge el bolero? El bolero surge de esa unión, de esa música también.
How did the bolero emerge, for example? From the union of all these different musical influences. Where do all these musical styles come from? From the East, from Oriente. In Oriente, a very special mix of French, African and Spanish took place. And from this mix came son. There are other important things, but the identity of the Cuban is marked by the dance and the music. Dance and music are the most important expressions of Cuban culture. That's why there is a national ballet. That's why there are so many folk groups. That's why there are so many dancers. And that's why there is a system of art schools that has educated so many artists.
También no. El sistema de escuelas de arte que han refinado a este muchacho, por ejemplo, a Costa y a otros muchos.
Music and dance is a way of life here. There always been. That comes with the country's beauty, the fact that it's a whole island. The sea is nearby, walking distance, but it's a very warm sea. It's very colorful, and so all that inspires you to dance. They're happy people. They're open people. They're people that. Because of the past, they managed to have a very high culture and sense of what the art is. They're very knowledgeable and they had their own opinions. But they're very warm. They're very warm people. They're happy. That's what everybody says. They have a sense of pride and at the same time, they have dignity.
When you talk about Cuba, you have to talk about the feeling of the Cuban people, and you have to talk about the music. If you don't talk about the music, I think there are some things missing there in that conversation. You have to talk about dance. You have to talk about flavor. You have to talk about mood. That's part of us. Dance, music, I think that's one of the most precious things we have. My name is Daivel Perez Garcia, but everybody calls me Benny, because of Benny Moré. I was in a show at the time that everything was in memory of Benny Moré. And we used to dress like him, the hat, the can, almost his clothes. And so when we were dancing, the choreographer and the director, they start to say, oh, look, look, he looks like Billy when he's dancing. And from that time on, everybody start to call me Benny, and that's it. That's all. That's the story of Benny.
Son is the predominant musical force in Cuba and the roots of salsa. Son originated in Santiago de Cuba in the eastern part of the island, from where it traveled to the city and became more refined. Antonio Pérez Ávila.
El problema es el siguiente. Sí hay pequeñas diferencias entre zonas de Cuba.
There are variations in the music found in the three main regions of Cuba, the west, the center, and the east. For example, what we call El Punto Cubano, country music, is played in one way in Havana, in the center there is another type, and in the east another one. But actually, although there are small differences according to the area, the melody, the harmony, and the rhythm are all the same in all the Cuban culture. It is son.
Su célula musical, su célula rítmica, es son.
He played the trumpet, and the trumpet is one of the main instruments that played in the song, because the song needs the sound cover, and this is something that he has in his blood. He likes to play the trumpet, and he likes song. He likes song very much because it has a rhythm and has things that he enjoyed playing. He enjoyed everything about the song. People say that song is something for all guys, but he said no, the song is for the one that feel in the heart and keep it in the blood.
Cuba's musical traditions are passed down from generation to generation. This is one of the reasons why the music is so strong. The musicians may have studied in conservatories, but it's still very much an oral tradition, and you'll hear young guys playing with performers who are in their 70s and 80s.
We are so much so involved with the music, with our traditional culture, that have been passing from generation to generation, especially the son, the father, and the grands of all of us. We've been taking care about it as well. Recording and saving and singing from one team to other team, from one generation to other generation. So, never been lost.
The people that play song are old, but at the same time there are the teachers of the young people that get involved in this. So he learned too much with them, but they are people that are old and are not in a position, they are not available to play and to perform with big bands because they are old, they are tired. But at the same time they are fighting for keep the music alive in their heart, so they can form small groups and fight for the dream, fight for the song, fight for the music, and came here. They are from Artemisa, it's another province at the west of Cuba, and they are coming every day here to play song for the whole world, because in this restaurant come many tourists from different parts of the world. So this is something that they have in their heart.
Ocho empieza yo.
That extrovert national temperament and culture, blending Africa with Spain, is also what makes Cuban ballet so unique. The Cuban style of ballet seeks to combine classical rigor with the physicality of Latin dance.
My name is Damian Doneseres, and I'm the translator of the Cuban Ballet School. This is the National Ballet School of Cuba. This is a very, very old building. The first stone was laid in 1902. It was renovated in 2001, and it has 20 studios. We have around 300 students. We have students here from elementary level and medium professional level. So it's they are from, let's say, 9, 10 years old to 17, 18 years old.
The ballet school, the Cuban Ballet School, the founders of the Cuban Ballet School, Alicia and Fernando Alonso, dedicated all their life to study and analyzing every existing school out there and picking up elements that were suited to our own bodies and our own temperament. It's the youngest school of all the existing schools, but in a way it's been so successful that a lot of people think it's like a real factory of dancers. Cuban dancers, especially the men, are celebrated for their muscular, visceral dancing, the height of their lips, the power and masculinity of their style. Our school is mainly, its main influence is the Baganova School, the Russian School. In that school, because of the spaces were huge, if you take a look, the Bolshoi, the Kiro, they're huge. It meant that there is a danger of a dancer to get lost in this vast space, which is forcing to project even further so that the artistry could come across even further. And so because of that, everything is bigger, it's a bigger jump as you can, it's not afraid to be more, more is better. Where the spaces and the whole feel of British school is more intimate. The Cuban school, it has, I would say, 70% influence from the Russian. So we inherit that kind of mentality of bigger and more is better. Cuba's national art schools stand as a symbol of the ideals of the revolution. But for the last 50 years, they have stood abandoned and unloved. Mario Coyula is a Cuban architect and architectural historian.
The context in which the schools of art were started was this idea by Fidel to make the most beautiful schools of art in Latin America, open to Latin American students. And this is a beautiful idea. The funny thing is that the architects were later criticized for doing exactly what they were asked to do. They were asked to do the most beautiful schools of arts in Latin America, and they did. And then they were criticized for concerning too much about beauty and not about cost and about other things. When I see a building so beautiful, so special, attractive, like the ballet school, in very bad condition, falling apart, it's very sad because we are going to lose part of our heritage, our recent heritage. And the schools of art were demonized officially, and this is what makes them, as a reaction, more attractive to people who would like to establish a parallel between the schools of arts, the fate of the schools of arts, and the fate of Cuba.
With the island socialist model gradually changing shape, the fate of the schools echoes a broader debate over the legacy of the past 50 years and how Cuba's future should be defined and by whom. John Loomis, the author of Revolution of Forms, Cuba's Forgotten Art Schools.
The Cubans have always been very good at providing excellent art education under some of the most dire of circumstances. But things really are changing now. And I think this opens the door to, should there be other participants in this chain? Should there be participants from the outside? When the debate was happening in November of 1999, and Fidel announced that the schools should be restored and should be preserved, one gentleman got up and said, "Comandante, this is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity because, you know, there are institutions and foundations and individuals around the world who are very interested and would like to support the schools and could really help out." And Fidel kind of straightened up his back and said, "You think Cubans can't do it? But in the current economic situation, some sorts of outside partnerships should be explored."
Antonio Pérez Ávila.
I am optimistic and I look at the future positively. If there is a stable culture and identity, then we have nothing to fear. A society that is not renewed cannot develop, and it is the same for culture. If you don't renew it, you can't develop it.
Una sociedad que no se renueva no se desarrolla. Igual que la cultura. Si la cultura no se renueva, no se desarrolla.
The Latin American countries must get together and create a union like Europe has done. Even with its different cultures and all the problems it has, Europe has been able to join together. Latin America and the Caribbean have the same identity. We have the same language, the same culture. To be powerful and preserve the Latin American and Caribbean culture, we have to work together.
Si no se ve culturalmente el problema, no se va a lograr.
Art has that potential to unify people, to actually open people's mind and horizons to the point that they could then have better judgment about life in general, you know, keep kids out off the street. I think to me, if you ask me, the education and all these schemes, nobody should, I think by right, I think we should have the right to actually educate ourselves freely and to have that chance and opportunity. Because the more we do it that, the less crime would be, the less looting would be, the less polemic and the less riot would be. You will have an educated people and a sense of community even, because that's what art does, it's unified.
Nunca podré morirme, mi corazón no lo tengo aquí. Allí me está esperando, está guardando que vuelva allí.
Cuba is a wonderful country. It's vibrant, the history is very rich, but equally complex. It's a country filled of music, arts, you know, people of all kinds on the street. It's a country I love. You've been listening to Will Carlos Acosta Get to the Point, presented by me, Carlos Acosta, and produced for the World Service by Cecile Wright. Coming soon.